Well, folks, originally what I was going to do was just an AMA because I have a lot of questions that people have sent me. But a lot of the questions deal with things that David Zutty has been thinking about, talking about, and writing about. So I thought I would have him share the burden today. So, David, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be on. Sorry, I was muted.
Yeah. So welcome back to the show. The big question that I want to start with has to do with Greenland. When Trump first got reelected, before he got even sworn in, we were hearing talk of Greenland, and I was baffled by this. I thought, don't we have bigger and better things to worry about than Greenland? And then the arguments that were being put forward for this struck me as entirely specious. First, that Greenland needs to be American territory to protect it from Russia and China. Well, Greenland is part of NATO, and therefore the United States would be protecting it from Russia or China anyway. The United States has unlimited, basically carte blanche, to have bases on Greenland anyway. Why acquire the territory? And the other thing that was being put forward was, there are all kinds of great minerals there that we can that we need to have. Well, but again, whether this is U.S. territory or Danish territory, doesn't really matter. There's a global market for minerals. We'd still be paying the market price. The United States doesn't need to take ownership of this. And as these pretexts have been floated and batted down and then refloated and batted down, it became pretty clear to me that there was a hidden agenda here. Trump, in one interview, basically just came out and said it's psychological on his part, which is not very comforting. I don't see why we should be basing foreign policy on Trump's psychology. He wants to acquire territory. But this is crazy because he got put into office because a significant percentage of people basically want fewer brown people in America, and they don't care if it's quote unquote good for the economy. And then suddenly Trump is popping up. Meanwhile, he's saying we're going to deport large numbers of people. He's popping up and saying it'd be great for our economy to acquire this territory that's majority Eskimo, basically. And I just thought, this is bizarre. This is like he's just defaulting back to a Republican kind of thinking that seems to be completely oblivious to the motives of a lot of people who put him in office. So anyway, I thought you had some very interesting thoughts about the whole Greenland adventure, and I wanted to get your take on it. Another thing we should talk about is how damaging this seems to be to our relationships with our European allies and NATO. What are your thoughts?
Right. So I would normally disregard this as Trump being Trump and trying to chase a real life STEAM achievement like the Nobel Peace Prize. But apparently Stephen Miller is pushing for this too. And Miller is a gamer. He's a calculator. He's Machiavellian, probably a Straussian. And he has a plan or something. There's some logic behind, there's some method to his madness, unlike Trump's. And like you said, like that does make sense because it is part of NATO. I'm sure Denmark would be happy to lease us a base. They would probably want that. There, no European likes Russia. Like there, I'm sure there's some contrarians, but generally Russia has been the traditional enemy. It's not just a shrieking libtard thing. It's generic Europeans don't like Russian tanks near them. That's simply common sense. And the Russian bear looks a lot more ugly and ferocious the closer you are to it. So I in the article I wrote about this, I kind of hashed out what this might be. Well, it's not a normal base. Now, there's global warming. There is a chance that this could become really valuable in 200 years, but that's a long, long time. And we need to survive the next election. As much as I am for thinking ahead, losing the next election could be civilizationally ending or really damaging. Also, there's a problem what to do with the native Eskimos, because if you look at Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico is in this Twilight area being a free associated state where they're not their own country. I think we do pay for the base there, and they have no representation. They only pay 1% sales tax, but they can also immigrate perfectly free to America. You can't keep Puerto Ricans out. They're under the current law, whatever that's worth. Not that I'm a fan of law, but under, because law matters right now and it shouldn't, but because it does, they can just waltz forever. They can go to New York, Los Angeles. Nobody can say no Puerto Ricans. So if we were to annex Greenland, we have to be very careful about how to deal with the natives. Are they going to be a free associated state? And if so, do they have the right to immigrate? I would say no. They need to stay there. Bless their hearts. They can keep their native culture and their native land, which is very unique, and not come here and bring issues here. And that's a huge can of worms. And another theory behind this is that they're simply trying to make Europe man up and scare them. But there are ways of doing this which are better. For example, you could simply tell them, hey, this is going to be quid pro quo. You've been dealing with the United States, which has been pushing liberalism, all the subversive left-wing stuff, wokeness, anti-white stuff, since 1945. New bosses in office. The incentives are being reversed. If you want us to fund your defense, first of all, we want you to be strong, ideally, but if we're going to help you out, you need to respect free speech, stop banning parties and candidates, release your political prisoners, get your judiciary under control, start remigration, stop the anarcho-tyranny. And what I would do, I would actually create an objective measure. You see, for standards and discipline, the standards have to be clear. Every NCO knows this. You can't yell at somebody without telling them what they did wrong and being clear about what you expected. So tie it directly, American aid directly to that. Say, if you meet these benchmarks, we'll help you out with Ukraine and other defense matters. If not, we will pull back. And that will be on you. And just make it very quid pro quo, very objective. And a lot of these people would probably cave, especially if this was combined with threatening sanctions, like real big boy sanctions against countries and individuals. So that got me thinking, this isn't just that. I think I had this weird idea that there is a Cold War style James Bond movie idea creating not just a generic base here, but a secret base under the ice shelf, trying to restart operation. It's called Ice Farm. And that was going to involve thousands of miles of tunnels under the ice shelf of Greenland. And they'd have nuclear missile launchers that could be carted about and they're mobile. So they're concealed, they're mobile. That means you can't take them out. That's a very strong second strike capability. And it's right due to the curvature of the Earth. It's right next to Moscow. Alaska would be a good thing too, except they don't have an ice sheet. So you just have to have generic strategic missile bases there. Now, there are nukes in Europe, but they are tactical nukes, which are kind of a meme weapon. They don't do much. They're like, it takes 2 to 4 tactical nukes to not even destroy a division, but simply render it inoperable. So it has to like retreat from the front line. So, and you also risk destroying the infrastructure you want to use for an advance. Every Hearts of Iron 4 player knows that. Now, so I was thinking, is this part of some weird thing that they're going to do up there? Maybe it's a smaller ice worm. The main problem is that the ice shelf moves, so that would destroy all the tunnels and take too much effort to rebuild them constantly. Maybe it's like mini ice worm, but I think there is some method to the madness. I just don't know what it is. That's simply my biggest guess right now. Now, there's also the problem that there's that gap. If you look at the globe and look at it straight on at the North Pole, that isn't enough to control that area. You also need to control some places like Iceland, so maybe they want that too. I don't know. But it's very unusual, very strange.
Iceland too. I don't know if we still have bases in Iceland, but we did in the past. It's not like we need to alter the sovereignty of countries in order to do these geopolitical things to contain Russia, or as they're saying, China, which is another oddity. Is China even a player in the Arctic?
They're not, apparently. It's very minimal.
So there's another theory that's being floated around, oh, they want to build some kind of server farm up there. It's cold, so it reduces the amount of cooling costs or the energy needed for cooling. And I heard this and I just shook my head. I just thought, well, there's Alaska. Alaska is vast. It's already part of the United States. If you want to build server farms and data centers in a cold climate, you could do it in Alaska too. You don't need Greenland. You don't need to alter the sovereignty of Greenland in order to build some kind of big AI data center that doesn't require as much energy to cool. So I just find this baffling. I kind of wonder if Trump is just reverting to a kind of 19th century model of America where he wants to be the guy who expands America's borders. And there are a lot of people on the right, sort of more normie adjacent, who are saying, yes, this is a healthy thing. Expanding America's borders is a healthy thing. And yeah, fine. We could have a debate about imperialism versus nationalism another day. But even if expanding America's borders is a healthy thing, and I don't see it as a healthy thing to want to have more non-whites with a royal road to come into America, even though there are not many non-whites in Greenland, it's like 55,000 or something like that. The idea that we're going to add majority non-white areas to our country because it's good for the economy sounds like the road to perdition, where we're way farther down the road to perdition than we need to be. And frankly, we need to reverse thinking. Now there's all this talk, well, let's add Mexico and Venezuela. So we've gone from talking about deporting millions of Mexicans to making them citizens. There's something kind of daft about that. And the truth is that America isn't a healthy country. America is a really sick society. And the way that a sick society gets better is not to pretend like it's a healthy society, not to pretend like we're young and virile and expansive and that we're in the 19th century when we have 100 million invaders and parasites, you know, clawing at our entrails and basically throttling the life of our nation. If we don't take care of these problems and get rid of people, we don't have a future at all. And so the idea that Trump would be spending limited social capital, political capital, pursuing these daft expansionist policies in a situation like this, really, he's starting to seem like Mad Emperor Trump.
Yeah, we need to be focusing on annexing Minneapolis and Los Angeles before we start even annexing Greenland or anything.
Yeah, I agree. I very much agree. And so I'm just I'm very baffled by this. I do think it's we haven't heard the end of this. Now Trump is talking about putting tariffs on the Nordic countries.
Yeah, he's going to slap a small tariff, I think 10% on them, and then he's threatened to increase that if there's not a sale by June 1st.
The trouble is that he thinks he's making America strong, but America, no matter how strong it is on its own, is stronger if it has friends and allies. And by doing this, he's alienating friendly allied countries, and he's making America look like a kind of grotesque, bloated global bully. It's really a bad look. And another thing that really concerns me is the effect that this is going to have on ethno-nationalists, remigrationists in countries like Canada and in Europe. And our friend Endeavor, who's been on our show many times, said it really well today. On Telegram and X, I urge right-wingers in Canada and Europe to disassociate themselves from MAGA. Even if there is some ideological overlap, MAGA is stupid, crass, and clearly hostile. Anything associated with Trump is more likely to poison the well on remigration than advance the idea. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, it's a big problem because in Europe, they do want to ban parties and candidates who favor remigration. However, they can't do it openly and honestly on remigration. So they'll probably do it on a pretext. which an easy one to simply say that you're an enemy of the state. You're colluding with foreign powers, whether that's Russian sympathies or going URA with America and over Greenland, and you're snuggling up to people from administration like Elon Musk and other associates who are for this project. It'd be like if a party here, say if the, let's say American Renaissance got really, really snuggly with China for whatever reason, and they were hanging out with Xi Jinping at a time when China was threatening to annex Alaska. We need to just make that good Republicans reverse the roles and ask, how would that feel? We're going back to kindergarten. How would it feel if someone else took your toy, Timmy? How do you feel if someone else punched you in the face, Bob? It's that simple. That's going to be bad in other people. First of all, there is a problem of being banned or deemed a state, you know, a threat or something, and just that opens the door to more persecution, more surveillance, more harassment. And that will be the pretext they use. There is, I can't pronounce his name, but Georgescu from Romania, who was banned on allegations of Russian collusion, but it's all because we know that he was going to basically not put Romania up for sale to rich oligarchs or allow infinity migrants. That was the real reason. But he was kind of, he fell into the trap of being, of just appearing a little too pro-Russian, and that's a big problem. I would recommend a lot of Europeans to simply, if they don't like the Ukraine policy, is simply abstain from voting or say you're neutral on it instead of trying to do this whole base Putin thing. A lot of them don't. They're smart. But like America now this is a double whammy. It's not just Russia. It's you're snuggling up to this world power that is trying to annex chunks of NATO countries. And it's a bad look. It's not just the problem of a anarcho-tyranny of judges or being banned. It's also what will happen at the polls. Other Europeans are going to look like this, and it's going to be weird. It's going to be make them uneasy. It's insulting. Even if they don't feel threatened, they probably will feel insulted. And we want to go over there and change the incentives, turn off U.S. aid, but try to be friendly for once. Stop brutalizing Europe. We've been basically brutalizing and smacking Europe around since 1945, which is shameful. And it's time to end this pimp-ho relationship, basically, and get back to normal. That means respecting them. I know a lot of people, a lot of this I think is, I hate using these psychological terms, but it is projection. It's a lot of Americans don't want to admit how weak and dysfunctional and brown and libtarded America is, or how legalistic and how stupid and overregulated. So they go accuse the Europeans of being that. But look at America. America is actually there's more litigation in America, which is stupid. I have several policies that could reduce that. We have a out of control women. I think Western women are worse than Eastern European women, but my goodness, American women seem to take the cake. We have a massive hoeflation problem. We have an inflation problem. The economy sucks. We're 50% white. Our institutions were captured. Chicago and Los Angeles and Detroit and Minneapolis became like little African nations or greater Aslan, like way before Paris had, there were, you know, black people in Paris, like that one Rapsalan niggas in Paris with the soft R. And this is pure projection, and it's going to rub the Europeans the wrong way. And that's bad because we want to help them, not just as our blood brothers and sisters, but because if we get re-migration going over there, that will make it easier here. It will show that it can work. And there'll probably be a lot less drama in Europe of re-migration than in America because there's just fewer of them, despite what London looks like. There's simply fewer of them. And they're all recent arrivals. It's not people who are illegal who came over in the 80s or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I do think that it's very sobering, first of all, to see how idiotic and bellicose and insulting a lot of MAGA normie types or normie adjacent types are about Europe. They're just saying, you're our slaves. We can do what we want with you. They're swaggering around. And it's just grotesque, frankly. And even if Trump isn't per se as obnoxious as some of these people, he's unleashed these people. And I don't see how Europeans can read this kind of stuff, look at this kind of stuff, and just ignore it and laugh it off. It is damaging to our relationship to Europe. And as a white nationalist, my primary concern is globally white people surviving and flourishing in all their white homelands. And to ensure that that happens, we need to have cooperation and amity between white nations. And we need to practice that at the highest levels of our own movement. And so our messaging on this kind of stuff really needs to be a kind of weary disdain for this kind of anti-European or anti-American bigotry and chauvinism, because it's not helping. And it's very, very tempting to get down in the trenches and fight, you know, tooth and nail with these people, but that's not what we should be doing. We need to be above this, and we need to signal that that's the proper place for white nationalists to be, is above it, bemoaning this unfortunate tendency, and the fact that this is just a tendency of human nature, because the more people you empower, the more dumb people you empower. This is the downside of populism. I think populism is a glorious thing, but the more populist your movement, the more average and below average people are going to be empowered and given voices, and they've got to be managed. And unfortunately, the worst voices and the worst tendencies of the masses, the MAGA masses, are being encouraged by Trump. And I just think this is a bad thing. We do not need to be sharing anti-European, sweeping negative anti-European means. The European mind can't imagine this. And then they talk about, you know, sprawling American McMansions, boat-sized American cars. And it's just so juvenile. It's just so base. It's just so materialistic. And it's so politically self-defeating. And beyond that, it's going to have a sell-by date. It's got a very, very soon sell-by date. This could all be reversed in a few years. These people are acting like Trump has enacted a permanent revolution, and that America is now better, and we'll show these Europeans. America isn't even 50% white, or it's certainly not 56% white. It's probably at best 50% white. America is worse off demographically than any European country. Ideologically, America is worse off than any European country. And the big ideological poison pill that we have to spit out is this civic nationalist idea that the Americans are not a people, we're an idea. That is actual horseshit. Just certified, you can stamp it, horseshit. I had a friend who used to have a stamp, a big rubber stamp that said horseshit, and he would get things that would irritate him, and he would put the rubber stamp, the horseshit stamp on it, just to show his disapproval. I thought it was kind of funny. I can certify that this is horseshit, and we just need to get beyond this kind of stuff. We are not a powerful society. We're a very weak and sick society. We're weaker and sicker than Europe, collectively speaking. We're in no position to lecture these people. It is good, I think, that J.D. Vance has said things like, there's a new sheriff in town, and we frown upon your attempts to ban parties like us. Unfortunately, Trump is now behaving in such a way that that's actually going to hurt parties in Europe like us. And I do think Endeavor's right. I think the identitarian movement really needs to just take a ourselves alone attitude for a while, because I think that Trump is really going to harm them. Trump is allowing the EU establishment, complete with its genocidal anti-white policies, to pose as the defenders of European sovereignty. He is gifting them a renewed lease on life, and he is giving them an excuse, because of unfortunate ideological resemblances, to Trump to tamp down on them. Ideologically, you know, America doesn't have to go along with this civic nationalist stuff. We don't need to say, well, we're just a nation of immigrants held together by ideas. That's not the founders' vision. That is a bit of nonsense, a propaganda that's been imposed upon our society within the last 100 years, basically. And it needs to be rejected. But you look at people like, for instance, Elon Musk or Donald Trump. I don't know if Trump's done the "we're a nation of ideas" thing, but practically everybody around him one time or another has that in their priors. Certainly Marco Rubio was doing that. Certainly Vivek Ramaswamy has to do that, right? And he's been endorsed by Trump. He's a thing because of Trump. But people like Tucker Carlson and Elon Musk, they will praise ethno-nationalism in Europe, because Europeans have actual ethnostates. They have actual homelands of different European peoples. But then they won't do that about America because, well, they think on some level that this myth is really correct, that America's just an idea. We're just a multiracial melting pot held together by constitutionalism and capitalism and Christianity of some sort. They have to break outside that mental prison. And that is a false understanding of America's identity. It's complete rubbish. And yet that reigns in America. There's only one country in Europe where that kind of civic nationalist idea is deep-seated, and that's France. Virtually every other country in Europe doesn't think that way or has only recently started talking that way. They've only recently started importing these American identity, civic nationalist ideas. They've only recently started giving up on the idea of jus sanguinis, basically citizenship through blood descent. That is something that the United States needs to reassert, citizenship through blood descent. So the United States is far less healthy than Europe. We're not in a position to be lecturing Europe unless we first identify, and this is possible. This is something that's important, and I'll pass it back to you, David. It is perfectly possible for somebody like Tucker Carlson to say, folks, Europeans, my brothers and sisters in Europe, we're screwed. We accepted this stupid idea that we are just a nation of ideas and a nation of immigrants, and we have completely debauched ourselves to the point of no return. And I don't want you to do this. Don't make the same mistake that we've made. That would be a humble statement, and it would probably play better. But the idea that silence, you know, a 56%, if only, white nation is speaking Europeans. There's no European nation that is demographically as far gone as the United States. None of them are even close.
I think, too, if you really want the Eurocrats to submit, what they're doing is that they are waiting and seeing what happens with 2028, with our election, because a lot of them probably think or are hoping that Trump is simply a flash in the pan and there will be another stolen election, or there'll be a pendulum switch, and they're hoping they can simply wait out another 3 years of Trump. Then we can go back to neoliberalism, restoring the incentives and going along with Europe and pushing immigration and open borders and anarcho tyranny. But if Trump wins the next election, or not, it won't be Trump, it will be MAGA, wins the next election and wins it decisively, that will tell the Eurocrats that the incentive structure is not a three-year thing. It's permanent. We'll probably have at that point achieved a one-party state or pretty much close to it. At that point, they will have to choose between Russia and America, and they'll choose us because we have better toys and better candy and we won't run tanks over them. And that's it might be that simple. I think a lot of people, the big dominoes have to fall is sweeping the 2020 election or just one country like Germany doing remigration and proving it works. That can, one or both of those things happen, the dominoes fall very quickly, probably. I will say this about Greenland and Europe. There is a silver lining in that Greenland can be used as a shiny object to distract Trump from Iran and Israel. Right now, we don't have the assets in the region to do any type of big operation, especially if Iran retaliated, and they probably will, and it'd be pretty bad because they're not fighting a defensive war. They're not starting off with a sneak attack within their own borders. So maybe this can keep Trump distracted from doing stuff for Israel and Netanyahu. It's ironic, like, which Jew talks to Trump? Is this base Stephen Miller, or is it going to be Bibi Netanyahu? That will probably determine foreign policy, is which Jew last spoke to Trump.
It's really sad. Again, white Americans are just playthings of these aliens who basically just bat us around like little toys, like, you know, pet toys, right? It's very sad. We do not control our destiny. Not yet, at least. So there's some other big issues that people have questions about. Let me check the chat here. One sec. I just want to make sure that we're not missing any new super chats coming in. Okay, we've got a number of things here. Let me just run through this. First of all, Will writes in with a $1,000 donation. This is back on the 8th. Wow, thank you very much. I very much appreciate that. That's very generous. A friend of ours, RW, has written in with $25. What are your thoughts on the current political instability occurring in Iran right now? What position should white nationalists take? Also, I think you should add coffee mugs with the countercurrency Anus logo on it to the list of items available for sale on the merch page. It might help you raise more funds. Yeah, we have a designer we're going to work with, and basically that just got sort of, I don't know, forgotten about in the rush at the end of last year. But we have a designer we're going to work with, and that is one of the things that I definitely will add is a countercurrents mug with that logo, because I want one. I think it looks cool, and I'm sure other people will want it. And once you just get the thing set up, it doesn't really cost us anything, but we want it to look really nice. And so that is something we're going to work on. But let's just talk about Iran right now. David, what are your thoughts on the current instability in Iran, and what position should white nationalists take?
Well, with Iran, I believe in non-intervention because this is Israel's war, not ours. And there's also terrible hypocrisy here because Trump and others are lecturing Iran about how don't you dare kill these people, these peaceful protesters, but they're not peaceful protesters. They're actually violent rioters. They have burned mosques and government buildings. They have actually killed people from the security services. So we're at the point where we may have to use state power to include killing people or severely injuring them to put down a liberal insurrection using state power. Iran is simply doing the exact same thing. So it's ridiculous. It's a disgusting double standard. And two, I think this was fomented in part by Trump and Bibi, because Bibi did visit right before this kicked off. Now, people were saying that's why Venezuela happened. That was all an Israeli plot, and I had to do some pushback against that on the American cesspool on, I think, their first show of the year, actually. But the Venezuela thing, it turned out, was planned. It was originally supposed to be before Bibi's visit around on either New Year's or Christmas, but there were problems with weather and other issues, so it was delayed. But this whole thing was astroturfed. It was encouraged. And this really is looking to be like the Iranian January 6th, where Trump, the U.S. government, and Pahlavi, the alleged so-called crown prince, instigated these riots, offering them hope. But nothing happened. And there is a rich history of this happening, not just with January 6th in America, where Trump just kind of hoped that a bunch of people would somehow do something and he could talk loudly and then kind of bounce, then not stand by his people. Well, Pahlavi was basically calling for an insurrection in Iran. And he is married to a Jew, I believe. He's peak what I call people of Irvine. Irvine is in a soulless corporate city in Orange County, which is not like the rest of Orange County. And it's filled with random rich random Asians of different varieties. And he's one of these people. He's not a real crown prince. And he couldn't supply support, but he told people to riot in the hope, I think what Trump, Bibi, and Pahlavi hoped is that they could overthrow the regime. And then America could swoop in the last minute and maybe, if there's a problem, push it over the hill. But if it's a big problem, if it's not going to work out, just kind of let these people suffer and die or go to prison. And we saw this before of the Bay of Pigs in the Cold War, where there's air support was promised and then it didn't show up and people died as a result. And the CIA was just going to swoop in if it went well, but if it didn't go well, just leave these people to die. And that's that. You can't trust these people. They don't back up their threats or their promises, or at least not as often as they do. The whole deposing the Maduro thing was a very rare instance of Trump keeping his word. So this is all plot. The big question, though, is why? Why were there not enough assets in the region when this kicked off, specifically an aircraft carrier? One explanation is that the moving an aircraft carrier would send a signal that something was afoot. I don't really buy that. I think they were hoping to do a really quick strike, and they miscalculated that this would fizzle. And it's because I think these people don't really understand that Iran is very stable internally. They have corrupt people in institutions, but the institutions themselves are not totally wrecked like in America. And there's also the big question of who takes over if the regime falls. It probably won't be Pahlavi or liberals or Zionists. It will probably be the IRGC who will clamp down and just kill everybody. And you'll go from having a cleric-run state with checks and balances and some limitations, but they're honest about the limitations, unlike Europe, to just having a straight-up military dictatorship. And I think a lot of people see that, and they don't want to gamble it. And the current Iranian regime isn't great. It's not achieving its true potential, but there are a lot worse options out there, like instability, border wars, and they're better off. They're by European standards, they're beneath European standards, but they're way ahead of the Middle East. So they're probably not going to riot over just because Pahlavi told them to. And the big question now is if they actually did a kinetic strike, it's too late. The riots have been put down. Iran is going to retaliate. And they will probably destroy the Israeli economy, hit airfields, and also Al Udeid Air Base. And that is very bad. We can't have dead U.S. troops or even a wrecked air base. It'll look bad for the elections. So if Trump is actually thinking of doing some type of strike, he better make it sanctions or something, because if not, this could really backfire. And it's the time has passed, and I think it's sad that all these people, even though they're libtards, are going to be probably J6 by the Iranian regime, where even if they're not executed, they're going to be in prison, they're going to be monitored on house arrest. And that's what you get when you trust the American promises. I'm going to be blunt, don't trust Americans or Trump.
Yeah, the analogy with J6 is really quite good. Trump basically caused people to martyr themselves and then decided, you know, to the equivalent to go golfing. It's just another feckless betrayal. And it's too bad for these people. I'm sure most of them will end up being hanged from cranes eventually. But it's not my country, and I'm not particularly concerned about it. I just don't care. I don't care. I wish the Iranians well, but they're better off under their own leadership. And if they want to change regimes, the United States should not be trying to agitate for that. Is this regime change being agitated for because Iranians want it or because Israel wants it? That's the big question. I think that, you know, Jews and their American allies and lieutenants and puppets have a very, very bad record of regime change. And if it's another one of these Israeli-inspired regime change ops, well, I want it to fail miserably, and I hope it has failed miserably. So those are my thoughts. Let's go back to the chat. James sends us $3. Thank you. Conrad sends $40. RW sends us another 25. That's very generous. The anti-ICE protests that have erupted in cities since the shooting of Rene Goode depressingly demonstrate the truth that there is a very, very large percentage of white Americans who simply cannot and will not be saved. I don't know how large that percentage it is, but in terms of numbers, it's a large number. And you're right. It's depressing, but realistically, we have to recognize the fact that although we want what's best for white people, there are a lot of white people who will fight tooth and nail to stop us from giving them what's best for them. These people might be us in the sense of our chosen in-group and the chosen beneficiaries of our policies, but politically speaking, they are our enemies and they will just try to destroy us and prevent us from even helping them. That's just the situation that we're in. It's sad, but that's the truth. The latest piece I have up at Countercurrents is a piece called Us and Them versus Friend and Enemy, because those two distinctions don't map out easily or evenly. There are many members of us, our in-group, who are our enemies. And conversely, there are people who are not us, namely non-whites, who are our friends because they want to help us with basically promoting white homelands and white identity politics. So a lot of infighting, as you like to, people like to say in our movement, a lot of confusion basically arises from failing to understand that us versus them and friend versus enemy are not the same distinction. And the whole ICE shooting thing is another thing I really want to talk about with David. We have about 15 minutes. Hunter Wallace has written a piece where he's in a bad mood. He's in a sour mood on Trump. And he wrote a piece at Occidental Dissent, Axios, Trump's immigration erosion worries his team. And he just sort of summarizes with bullet points ways that Trump is messing up. And basically, the last thing is that he's engaged in theatrical ICE raids and deep blue zip codes where caped white libtards like Rene Goode want illegal aliens to stay instead of picking low-hanging fruit and deporting millions of illegal aliens where it matters in red states and purple states without the negative publicity. The common denominator of MAGA's FAFO doctrine is being drunk on power, addicted to grandstanding, and not caring about how any of these moves play or their political consequences. Now, I wanted to discuss that with you, David. I just want to toss out one thing, two things. First of all, Vance has said, no, we're not just focusing on blue states and blue cities. We're focusing on the whole country. But because these sanctuary cities, these deep blue pockets of leftist corruption filled with these non-white migrants and welfare cheats and illegal aliens are basically resisting us. And of course, the people who run the mainstream media are their megaphone. You're hearing about it more. And there's bad publicity. And they're going to try and provoke. Their strategy is to provoke. This is not me, Vance. This is me now. Their strategy is to provoke people to martyr themselves so that they can create moral panics and wave their hands and try and get well-meaning but basically weak centrists and Republicans to say, oh, no, we can't do this. I want my country back, but does it have to be mean? Do you have to have men with guns? You know, can't we just, I don't know, metapolitics our way without actually having to send these people away? Can't we just raise awareness forever while doing nothing? Obviously, that's the strategy. Basically, people like Rene Goode, people like this tranny who got his, her, whatever, eye shot, you know, these people are being manipulated into being cannon fodder and being martyrs so that the left can try and derail remigration because they are bound and determined to keep child molesters and scammers and murderers in our country. The person that ICE was going to deport, that Rene Goode thought worth dying over, was some, I think he was he Laotian or was he from south of the border? But he was a child molester. That's the person that she was dying to prevent from being deported. And the entire liberal media is promoting nothing but lies about this and hysteria to try and gaslight more retarded white women into becoming cannon fodder, basically to try and keep these people in the country. So that's the first point. The second point is that I think you can make a case for going after the blue states, even if they're not focusing on this, even though, even if the impression that they're focusing on this is being caused by the fact that libtards are resisting, even if that's true, but even if they were to focus on the blue states and light blue states especially, that's good. Way back when I wrote a piece on fortifying the next presidential election, one of the points I made is they should focus immigration enforcement on areas where it will make a difference in the next election. And we now know that hundreds of thousands, if not millions of non-citizens, illegal non-citizens, voted in the last election and will vote in the midterms unless they're gotten rid of. And so if you can go into these blue tumors like Portland and Seattle and Minneapolis and drain some of these basically banked voters, fake voters that empower people like Tim Walz and Fry in Minneapolis, you might be able to flip entire states or entire congressional districts. That's the kind of thinking they need to fortify the midterms and the next presidential election. So I think you can actually make a case for going hard on these districts. What are your thoughts, David?
We need to go hard and have no apologies. And there are several points I want to make. Part of it is that even if this is being overly brutal, which I don't believe it is, it's called for, and that's a good thing, is that Machiavelli gave some advice that if a prince has to do cruel things or which are evil or will be perceived, do it at the start of the reign, and then be nice, get nicer as you go along. Don't be start off nice and then become cruel. Because people will look at the trajectory and ask, well, what will he do next if you're becoming crueler with time? If you start off cruel, people will actually breathe a sigh of relief once you become nicer. And we saw this, I think, a little bit with, we call it in the movement the Moat and Bailey tactic. The best example of this was with the trans hysteria, where they push for trans kids and try to make that sacrosanct. And all these dumb conservatives said, well, I'm okay, but they have to wait till they're 18. Oh, gosh golly. And they were fools because they played in the game where if the left could make trans kids enshrined into law, wonderful. But if not, they would simply solidify their fortress. Moton Bailey refers to like a fort, a medieval fort and a palisade wall. It's the reverse of what you think, but I won't go into medieval siege warfare. But by simply having a service take that principled stance of wait till you're 18, they solidify the whole transgender craze. And then if they wanted to, they could then fight for trans kids in the future. They took territory. So what we can do here is something similar where we start off with extreme ICE brutality, you know, killing protesters or rioters, I should call them, destroying people's eyesight, just completely smacking them around, having some good old-fashioned brutality like it's the Bronze Age. I mean, nobody likes these were the exact same people who are tyrannizing us during COVID. Let's slap them around. Oh, the cuck independents won't like this, and the Republic cucks won't like it. What we can do is then, this is like Moton Bailey or haggling at a Mexican swap meet, which I did as a kid. You start off high, start off harsh, then you come soft. You take it down. You say, okay, we're not going to go door-to-door and tear gas libtards and beat up furries and all that good fun, but we're going to make E-Verify mandatory. We're going to go after the hotel chains, the agriculture, which they should. They shouldn't be slacking on that. they're going to tax remissions when they send money to other countries at something like 50 or 100%. They're going to make it so that if you're on welfare, you can't send money out, and a bunch of other little policies you can do until basically do remigration via the softer tactics. And then people will say, okay, this is wonderful. Now, if we had started off with those softer methods, people would have called that extreme and mean. How dare you? That's harsh. That's a Nazi thing. Wow, wow, wow. I'm crying and bawling. But now because we've gone full ICE Gestapo, not really, but we're getting there. It'll take time, but it's beautiful. I like the edits. This will make the other things which would have been called horrible, nasty, evil, authoritarian measures look very moderate and civil, and people will simply go along with that and clap for them like trained seals. They'll breathe a sigh of relief. And I think there is a reason why we need to be harsh, however, is to bait out the lurking color revolution. We cannot repeat 2020. We have to show them before the presidential election that we will not blink. We don't care if people die. We're going to spit on the martyrs like George Floyd and Rene Good and the Frey that was beaten and the libtard who lost an eye and laugh, and we will be callous. The stars, the outer planets recently changed. I think this will help this, where Philosophy Cat did a whole article about that recently. But if you don't believe this, it's time to simply turn the page on that and show them that, yeah, we will go to your hood, to your deep blue city, and smack you around if you get uppity. And we will dare you to give us a reason to do the Insurrection Act or suspend habeas corpus. Do it. And this way, too, we can also bait out any possible terrorist attacks. We can bring down the hammer. Ideally, we can force the FBI to go after these people. And when they are insubordinate, which they will be, we can then fire those insubordinate agents and clean out the FBI that way. The FBI should have been cleaned out on day one, but that is a dangerous lurking threat. They have to be neutralized. This is the great way to test loyalty, but I feel like they aren't being tested as they should be. But yeah, we can do mass J6 style arrests and prosecutions. I believe Tim Homan or someone else has talked about basically doxing them. I don't like using that term because we're not listing their personal phone number or their address or calling for violence, but basically notifying, creating a searchable database of their name, and people can equate and their actions, and people can equate employers and schools with that. And that would be, and also friends. And that's perfectly great and wonderful. And we can do that. That should be done in conjunction with mass prosecutions. However, there is a problem with that, is that a lot of these people will be there will be problems with rogue juries, judges, and prosecutors. And then even if we really try to do full J6 stuff, there's going to be some level of leniency in many of these cases. So this is the way to make sure that they're put on a list. And there's also a psychological stigma they're really not used to. They will know that they're on Z list. And so if we're as bad as they say we are, maybe that's a bad thing. And two, a lot of these people, they're chasing status, and they need to be taken down a notch. And another thing, too, is that we need to do this during, I don't think this is planned out by the administration, but it's great that we're doing this during the winter because the blacks are not joining in. I think blacks generally wouldn't, just because they're not illegals, so this isn't their fight. They're very opportunistic. Now, they might have just because, you know, why not riot? Why not burn down a Foot Locker? But by doing it during the cold season, we've essentially taken the Coalition of the Ascendant and split it in half. The blacks are staying home and warm and cozy, and it's mostly liberal white women who now do not have any allies, and therefore we can divide and conquer our enemies, come down on the crazy, the awfuls, the kamikaze Karens, and wreck them hard so that they are traumatized and they stay home when the blacks get uppity in the summer. So I do believe in divide and conquer. And I do believe we should actually, I think the left has said that we basically are trying to bait out the Insurrection Act or suspend habeas corpus, and I think that's a good thing. We should do that. Maybe we shouldn't have a next election. Or maybe we should hold it after we've done the 2030 census and just declare martial law until this whole thing is resolved, because this is a migrant insurrection. And this is very good. Also, if they're going to do terrorism, let them do that now so they get caught, so you don't have it during an election year. So this is wonderful. I think it's great. We should continue. We should not relent. And I do recognize the Motumbele and the Machiavelli advice strategy. I don't want it to be perceived that we are backing off. And two, people will get used to this. We can make this the new normal. People at some point will simply get beat down. And one of the things why the white women, these liberal white women, are so insane is because this is threatening their status. They know that this is taking away their electoral power. This could solidify permanent right-wing rule. And there goes their pink dollar job as the HR director, their ability to lie in court and perjure themselves. They have a lot of status and money from the system, and it's being directly threatened. That's why they're not, part of this is ideological and moral hysteria, but it's also very self-interested. Women and liberals, and especially liberal women, all of humanity, but especially these segments, tend to chase status and money. And you take that away, they'll be broken. And so if we take that now, you're on a list. You lose your job. You are put on house arrest. You have to understand that even if the prosecution fails because of jury nullification, that's still a win if they're on house arrest for like 12 months. Asking a J6er, the process is a punishment. You're forced to basically be on house arrest or get an ankle monitor, which you pay for. That's a huge punishment. That's still winning, even if the whole case gets dismissed, if it's for something like 12 months. It's very disruptive, and there's a lot of stress. So these people, they want to LARP as being little resistance fighters. Well, the moment that this starts to not be in their interest, that will traumatize them, and hopefully they know not to get uppity in 2028. So I say keep it up, but I say even intensify it.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. One can make a case for this. I do hope that they get the bulk of this out of the way before the midterms, and the midterms are right around the corner. There are other things that they really need to do. Frankly, we need to ban mail-in voting. We need to ban the harvesting of these mail-in ballots. We need to make sure that everybody who votes has to show some kind of state-issued ID and so forth. We should have federal election rules. This should have been a priority from day one, and I wish that this had been pushed through. So again, we have to fortify these elections because we cannot allow these crazed leftists back into power. And I hope that there are people in Washington who are serious enough to do this. And just seeing all the energy wasted on this Greenland folly, though, and the fact that we can have our foreign policy spun just by a phone call from Bibi is very, very disheartening. So let's look at a few more questions here, and then we'll wrap up. We're at the two-hour mark exactly. Kalar writes in with $25. Thank you. That's very generous. Don't bother watching the Tucker Karaganov interview, 30 minutes of retarded Duganist nonsense. I'm surprised they even published it. Thank you. And Friedrich writes in with $25. Thank you. Hello. Very morale boosting to hear Sarah's success story despite the hurdles she faced. It's also hard and heartwarming too. Oh God, I was wondering whether they ship the copy to Europe too. Good luck and best regards. I don't think they can ship it to Europe, but that just means that there's a European coffee roaster that needs to pop up, right? So ABC writes in with $10. Thank you. Trump met Putin in Anchorage, Alaska last year. Russia withdraws from Iran and South America, starting with Venezuela and Cuba. Trump takes Greenland. NATO dissolves and Russia regains partial control over Eastern Europe after taking over Ukraine. Was that the deal? Not bad for USA. Well, that's a terrible deal for Europe, because frankly, the Russians are semi-retarded savages, and we don't want them taking any more territory from actual functioning European societies and making them pigsties as well. If Trump has done that, and I don't think that's the case, but if Trump has done that, he's going to go down in history as one of the evilest men in American history, frankly. And all for basically because he's just run by retarded memes. If that's true, it's terribly, terribly depressing. Archie writes in with $5. Might Tenet Media have been deliberately contaminated by Russian money to take down ethnic nationalists or just to support pro-Trump voices? No, I don't think that. I think the Tenet Media thing was just exactly what it was. Greedy influencers were willing to sell their takes to the Russians, basically. None of these people should ever be treated seriously again. That includes Benny Johnson. It includes Lauren Southern. It includes Tim Pool, as I like to call him, and everybody else in that deal. These people are whores, basically. They basically take money from people and basically determine the positions that they defend based on money. They're propagandists, and they have no integrity. Aaron writes in with $20. Thank you very much. Crime cannot be ended with education and opportunity. Criminals can only be apprehended by force. Nayib Bukele said that. Thoughts? What are your thoughts? David, comment on this.
Absolutely. And these people probably already got opportunities. It's not like they were in an African village. I went to a multiracial middle school aptly named Martin Luther King. And I'm pretty sure at least some of my classmates became felons and murderers even. And look, these people were given an institution. You give these people the opportunities. They don't appreciate carrots. They only really understand sticks. And yeah, you can't reason with them. We have generally tried to reason with them. I mean, it's a Catholic country down there. They have the church too. And at some point, if you're a first-time offender, maybe, yeah, you just need to be helped out. But these people aren't first-time offenders. They're just savages with face tattoos. Like, someone with, like, murder and rape face tattoos and gang symbols all over their body is going to own they're a beast. They have to be brutalized. And none of these dumb programs, they don't ever work. The only times they do work are in places like Finland, where it's, high, like, Nordic 120 IQ countries.
I agree totally. I think it's absolutely realistic, and this is how Bukele has turned his country from one of the most unsafe places in the Western Hemisphere to one of the safest places in the Western Hemisphere, safer than the United States.
Another point I want to make is back to the ICE raids, is that people may not like these raids now because it's mean. Well, guess what? El Salvador, I'm sure there was, even though they're less sensitive, there was some grumbling about it, but they liked when the crime dropped, they liked it. In fact, Bukele has very solidified his power by being something of a gamer president. So with these ICE raids, yes, crime will drop, but also wages will rise, rents will fall, and people will be happy. At some point, they're self-interested, materialistic. Make them happy, make their lives better, and they will be happy. And they will forget about all the horrible things we supposedly did to make that happen. They're like children. You have to basically ignore the temper tantrum, survive the election, and this will work. Like, if we just get past 2028, this is going to be, we're going to be have a one-party state, probably. And a lot of the pushback has been allegedly from young people who Trump won, but young people are fickle for good and for worse, and they can also swing right back to liking Trump. Also, a lot of the young people are the ones who are most likely to benefit from lower rents and higher wages. So this is wonderful. You might be able to actually be able to own a home. So we just need to stay the course, and the people will come to love it.
I absolutely think you're right. We just have to have strong hands and not get unnerved. Yes, I do think that there might be ways that you can finesse this. And yes, I would like to see E-Verify. They need to start arresting business owners. Sadly, I think Trump has made deals with business owners not to go after them. We will need more consistent leaders in the future. But taxing remittances and other things like that, I think, are very good. Another thing that's really wonderful, and I'll just end with this, is that Trump announced that they're no longer taking people from 75 countries from which the majority of the recent migrants are on welfare. Why burden ourselves with basically adding useless eaters to the welfare rolls. Why burden ourselves with parasites? They added 75 countries, or created a list of 75 countries, India not included. That is another thing that really has to be addressed. Obviously, the Indian mafia is very well ensconced in the Trump administration, just like the Jewish mafia is. Sadly, the white people mafia seems to be intermittently represented by the Trump administration. There is no white leadership that can call Trump and scream at him. There are Jewish leaders who can do that. There are Indians who can do that, obviously. There are business leaders who can do that. But sadly, there are no white leaders who can do that yet. But that's what the purpose of white nationalism is, basically, to be those white leaders and to solidify racially conscious white people as a fighting political bloc that can basically veto Trump's dreams, Musk's dreams, the dreams of all of these oligarchs if they cross us. We have to get to a point where basically the oligarchs fear the people. They fear racially conscious white people. They fear us as much as they fear Jews. We'll get there. So, folks, next week we will be back with another episode of Countercurrents Radio. Thank you, David. I want to thank all you people out there who have been commenting and donating. It's been great. And we will be back. And in the meantime, keep reading Countercurrents. Thank you.